it surprised me when I was talking to some researchers at the Cleveland Clinic, how little is really known about the cause. You know, people have this general idea that the immune system attacks the beta cells, destroys them, but not much more has been known. You have an idea now that it's not an immune system, an autoimmune system gone crazy. It's actually there is some problem with the beta cells themselves that trigger the response. Can you explain?
Yeah, that's right.
Can you explain your insight?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the textbooks in medicine are wrong in many regards. And about the cause of diabetes, we still have to learn a great deal. And I used to be saying that it's a mistake of the immune system, and now think it's a mistake of the beta cells. They are the hardest working cells we have in the body, so they're pretty prone on you know, being overworked and stressed. And when they do, they can give signals to the immune system that they're unhappy. And my feeling is turning into conviction almost that this the immune response is actually responding with the best intentions to distressed tissue, as it does in cancer and in infection. So it's the cry for help of the beta cell that makes them the victim of an autoimmune response.
Now, what is the nature of the stress that you're talking about? How does it manifest?
Well, that's subject to discussion, what stress really is, because many people talk about what they call ER stress, endoplasmic reticulum stress. That's mainly an overworked beta cell. A single beta cell can make up to 1 million insulin molecules per minute. So you can imagine this is a factory of proteins, and in that process, mistakes can be made. But what causes that stress? So beta cells, by definition, are always a little stressed because of this, but there are additional factors, sometimes exogenous, that can impact the beta cell. This can be a viral infection, any virus, but it can also be metabolic stress, a higher demand. Another recent discovery is that the pancreas of people that get type 1 diabetes is smaller on average than that of a non-diabetic individual, so it could be the sheer size of the beta cell mass that makes them work harder and more stressed. It can be inflammatory stress, so it can still be that it is an other kind of autoimmune response or any type of inflammation. We have to bear in mind the pancreas is an intestinal organ, and in your intestines we have 100-fold more bacteria than we have cells, right? So there is enormous load of microbiota in the gut, so that could be a stress factor. The bottom line, we don't really know, but it could be infectious, could be immune, could be autoimmune, and it could be metabolic.
Do you have any favorites in terms of the cause of perhaps a genetic component that leads to a breakdown perhaps in the beta cell, or perhaps viruses? Some enteroviruses have been identified. Which would you bet on? Whether
well,
there's
I
a
think
genetic
the evidence for enteroviruses is very weak and very circumstantial. And I've noticed that many of my colleagues have a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that it has to be enterovirus, to an extent that they're now going to do a vaccination trial. Let them do it. But the truth of the matter is it can be anything, including virus. And when you see the viruses, you see maybe one cell with a little bit of virus and the rest is clean. So I think that's pretty much very circumstantial. So that's not my favorite, as you can hear from my phrasing. I actually think it is something intrinsic to the beta cell. I don't think it's genetic, in the sense that when you look at the genetic risk for type 1 diabetes, the gene variants that contribute to the risk for disease are mostly immune genes. And in fact, they are the genes that you want to fight cancer. So they actually endorse a fantastic immune response to those people carrying those gene variants. So what you know, increase your risk for diabetes also increases your protection against cancer. So it gives you a fantastic sensitive immune system, and therefore those people that develop diabetes have a higher chance that their immune system actually might go array and destroy tissue that's not infected and not cancer, but just unhappy.
Yeah, it's interesting that in looking at this, It's almost the opposite of cancer immunotherapy in some
ways. It is exactly the opposite of cancer therapy. Well, actually, I'm saying type 1 diabetes is the same as successful anti-cancer therapy. Right, and the truth of the matter is now with the big breakthroughs in cancer therapy, where we do so-called checkpoint blockade, basically we take the brake off the immune system. The immune system is able to kill cancer, but in many cases, they will also start to destroy beta cells. So and only when you get cured of cancer, so only when the therapy is successful in cancer, you have that risk of getting type 1 diabetes. So it's very much like, that's why I'm saying it looks like the immune system is actually responding with the best intentions as it should have done if it were a cancer. And that makes me think that it's probably something in the beta cell. We used to talk about homicide, suicide. Homicide, it's the immune system killing the innocent beta cells. But now it's the beta cells actually attracting the immune system and making them very much responsible for their own demise.
Well, haven't you targeted some protein, I don't know if they're cell surface protein, some signal that is produced by the beta cell, you know, that triggers the immune response. Wouldn't that have a genetic component?
Not really, no. So first of all, there is very little on the surface of beta cells that distinguishes them from other cells, but there are some endogenous proteins that can be presented by some antennas of the immune system. We call those HLA molecules. And what we discovered last year is that stressed beta cells make mistakes in reading their genes. So, you know, it has a genetic basis, but it's not the same thing as genetic risk. So what happens is the ribosomes that normally translate messenger RNA into proteins, they normally start at the right start, but in case of stress, they can misread. And they start, let's say, the sentence halfway, and then it becomes completely bogus. But as a consequence, those beta cells start to make proteins that are completely unknown to the immune system. We call them neoantigens. And that is exactly what cancer cells do too. And those are proteins that the immune system is tailored to respond in their surveillance for cancer and infection. So there is something endogenous in the beta cell, and it's misreading of genes, but it's otherwise normal genes. It's the normal insulin gene making normal messenger RNA for insulin, except it's read in the wrong frame.
And are you seeing this in, I don't know how much human studies you've done, but do you see this in people across the age range? Because type 1 diabetes can affect people from age 2 through age 25 or older. You know, is it the same mechanism?
Well, that is a great question because, you know, we used to think of type 1 diabetes as one disease, and age is a very strong discriminator in the sense that you can get diabetes at any age. Yeah? The Prime Minister of the United Kingdom got it in her late 50s, and you can actually even get it before the age of 1 these days, now that we have more proper diagnostics. What I just described as a misreading of a gene, of an otherwise normal gene, that is something we see particularly in young children with a particular genetic background in terms of their HLA risk. So yes, there is an age phenomenon in there. And more we start to appreciate that although the disease very much looks the same in the sense that the source of insulin is destroyed, the beta cells in the islands of Langerhans, we see that this process differs in the very young versus the older. This, you know, it looks like before the age of 8 is very much different than beyond the age of 18. And in between, you have a kind of mix of disease processes, and that's incredibly important because when we think of a cure, the fact that the disease presents so diversely means that it will not be a magic bullet. So we need to really understand what distinguishes a child with type 1 diabetes from an adult with type 1 diabetes, and most evidence for a role of the beta cells is there for the very young.
You mentioned a cure. And that does, you know, the more you talk, the more complicated that does sound. But you've talked about inserting alpha cells as a possible therapy. They're sort of a, you call them pseudo-beta cells. Is that the most promising therapy that you can come up with, or you're researching, or what are some of those cures look like for you?
Well, I'm not a big fan of beta cell replacement, to be quite honest. One of the new insights that we have from studying the diabetic pancreas, studies funded by the JRF, they show that the disease is very diverse. And what we have learned from studying the diabetes pancreas is that many patients actually have beta cells even if they don't produce insulin anymore. It's as if they are hibernating or senescent. And so I actually hope and pray that we can actually get those beta cells back in action as soon as we stop the immune attack on the beta cells. Right, but I also believe now, with our new insight in what we how the disease may develop, that immunotherapy alone will not be enough. You also need to have beta cell therapy. But rather than transplant them, which is also very unfavorable, I rather have the own beta cells revitalized by beta cell therapy simultaneously with re-educating the immune system. That is my idea of a perfect storm in terms of immunotherapy. You need to both deal with the immune system and with the beta cells. And until today, not a single therapy has ever targeted the beta cells in type 1 diabetes. So that might explain why we haven't been extremely successful so far. It's a dialogue between the beta cells and the immune system, so you need to deal with both of them.
Right. Yeah. Well, the problem is still that the immune system is attacking any type of beta cell you put back in the body. What are the hopes? What is that's an area where I don't know anything about. I don't know what other people are working on. What do you think is the way to deal with the immune system once we have a beta cell therapy in place? What do we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So honestly, I don't think that encapsulation of islets will work. Islets need to be responding very quickly to changes in blood sugar. So as soon as they have to feel the blood sugar, the immune system will access them. And if they don't, they won't function properly. So there is a problem there. And beta cell replacement, certainly if they come from another donor, means that you have to give drugs that actually are very negatively affecting the beta cell function. So there is a real conundrum there. So here's another new thinking in the approach of how to cure type 1 diabetes.
Okay.
All autoimmune diseases, including type 1 diabetes, have always been to suppress the immune system, to bombard it into submission. I try to negotiate with the immune system, more like what we do in allergy. If you know the allergen, you can desensitize. And what we're trying to do now in the clinic here at the City of Hope is that we try to develop vaccines that teach the immune system how to do it right, so engage it rather than suppress it. I think that has a much better prospect for a legacy, a lasting effect, other than suppressing the immune system. You already pointed to the similarities between cancer and diabetes. If you suppress the immune system, your chances of cancer increase substantially. So you cannot suppress it. You need to embrace it, and you need to engage it and teach it how to leave the insulin-producing cells alone. So we're trying to make all kinds of vaccines that do this. We try to make the beta cells more vigorous. But again, rather than transplanting them from another source, I prefer to build on the reserve that patients often still have. There will be patients where there is a shortage of beta cells to start with. And for those, there is no escape but to implant islets. But that will be meaningless unless we teach the immune system not to touch them.
That's interesting. So the vaccine therapy that you're talking about, does it involve the antigens that you had mentioned
Yes.
before? And can you explain a little bit more about how you teach these immune cells to use the antigen, I guess, not to react to it, but to ignore it, maybe?
Yeah, to teach them actually to endorse them, to cherish them. That's actually what we do. So what we do is we take some precursor cells out of the blood, immune cells that we educate in the laboratory with vitamin D3. That's our magic bullet, our rocket science. So vitamin D3 is actually able to help those cells differentiate into tolerogenic rather than inflammatory cells. And those cells we feed with, as we say, beta cell proteins like proinsulin, and we inject them back into the patients. And what we have seen so far, and this is still very early on, is that it's safe because, you know, it's the patient's own cells, it's vitamin D, but they actually start to regulate their immune response rather than to activate it. And it's very specific. So this is one of the first steps into the holy grail of inducing tissue-specific tolerance, much preferred over complete, you know, ablation of the immune system or suppression, what we do in MS and in arthritis and psoriasis. We really try to teach the immune system how to do it right, and that's where the diabetes field has an advance over some other diseases. We know some of the main targets of the immune system, and proinsulin is one of them. So we actually make a vaccine around beta cell proteins and then try to teach the immune system to accept it.
Wow, that's cool. And you are testing this in people now?
Yeah.
It's not a clinical trial? What is
yes.
it?
Yes.
It is a clinical trial.
Oh,
wow.
It's a clinical trial. Yeah.
I guess just phase one or beyond phase one?
This is a phase one trial. We have already established safety feasibility in Europe, and now we're trying to also assess whether this therapy is able to preserve beta cell function in people that still have it. So type 1 diabetic patients, but shorter after diagnosis. The first trial was done in patients with disease for about 10 years. Now we try to do it in patients with only a couple of years. And that's also a novelty. Yeah? So far, all immunotherapies were done immediately after diagnosis. And it's true, it's more easily measurable whether those therapies have an effect. But it could also be during the medical emergency of the disease that's actually not a very good time to do it. So we do it once your blood glucose is already normalized again with insulin therapy, and people have gone through what we call the honeymoon, a period of natural remission that we see in many patients in the first year or so. So, and then we try, when things have calmed down a little bit, we try to educate the immune system how to do it right.
Wow, this is big news.
It is big news, I agree, yeah. It is extremely exciting, and we're preparing a report on the first trial now to really show what happened in the patients, but it's a completely new chapter in therapy of diabetes to start with. Until today, we were treating the symptoms of the disease, but not its cause. So now we move to treating its actual cause. And with all the new insight, we can actually build on developing tissue-specific therapies. But I'm already prepared that this alone will not be enough if we don't also treat the beta cells. So we must find, and actually there is quite a few drugs in a type 2 diabetes world that are actually designed to make beta cells happy again. So I think that with the combination of the two, immunotherapy and beta cell therapy, we could have a meaningful impact on the disease progression. So the word cure is actually on the horizon now.
One of my final questions, even to this point, you know, we've taken this long to even begin work on the sort of immunotherapy cure that you're talking about. Why do you think it's taken so long for us to understand what causes diabetes?
I think it has taken so long because we didn't appreciate that the disease is much more diverse than what, for example, animal studies taught us. I think animal studies have been quite a bit misleading. They have been guiding in some regards in terms of certain disease processes, but it's not the same as disease in humans. So since only a few years, we've been very much investing in understanding the disease in humans, and that turned out to be a can of worms. We have really discovered major differences in disease between patients and differences from animal models, and now we can finally really start building on that new knowledge to design proper therapies. And, you know, the fact that we always saw in some of the trials that we dismissed as being not successful, we saw an effect in 10, 20, 30% of the patients, but we didn't believe it was enough. In cancer, when you have an effect in 12% of the melanoma patients, it's eureka, right? And the champagne bottles open. So we have to be more appreciative of the differences and expect that we need different therapies for different patients with type 1 diabetes. So this is a kind of revival of immunotherapies and revisiting some of the older trials because there is probably more success than we had appreciated in those trials. But now that we know that the beta cell is playing such a strong role in its own demise, we can further build on this and try to expand our therapies to cherish the beta cells as well. I think that will be the future of diabetes therapy.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we started talking, you said they're going to need to rewrite the textbooks. And it's still true. When you look at what causes diabetes, they say, well, it's an autoimmune disease. And some people say it's caused by a virus. And you say that's not the case.
Well, I mean, you always have to be careful to say yes and no in medicine. So there may be a few cases where viruses may also play a role. By the way, it's still an autoimmune response, right? Even an immune response to cancer is an autoimmune response. So it is your own immune system responding to your own tissue. But the cause of this can be a different one than we had expected. And the reasons why the immune system is responding to the islets can be different in different individuals, but the processes following can be the same. So whether it's a virus or just super stressed beta cells because the pancreas was small, or you know, even some genetic genetically increased risk, there can be different causes to the same disease, but then still the way that you intervene can differ between individuals. So that is something that we now embrace and that we use as a stepping stone to design more personalized medicine, as we do in cancer, right? We used to think that breast cancer was one disease. Now we know there's hundreds of variations, and once we know which version we're dealing with, we can assign tailored therapy. So precision medicine is also what we need in type 1 diabetes. That was something we hope to avoid, but we have to bite the bullet. This is actually also going to be the case in type 1 diabetes. But knowing this means that we need to be more critical in selecting the patients and open-minded with regard to the outcome.
There's also a question I have about the stress component. Is there any validity to the idea that if you eat too much sugar, especially our Western diet, we have soft drinks and donuts and all this all the time. Is that a component in stressing the type 1 diabetes, or is it maybe a component in type 2 diabetes?
You know what? I think that is a very important question, and I'm struggling with this. When we use the word stress, we have to be really careful because some people think it's stress for our exams and so forth. My daughter is doing her finals, so she has a lot of it at this stage.
Right.
That's not probably the type of stress we're dealing with here. Metabolic stress, for sure. And although you know, type 1 diabetes is much less a lifestyle disease than type 2 diabetes, there are certainly environmental factors that contribute, and our current lifestyle and diet don't help beta cells, let's put it mildly. So we see a strong impact of our Western lifestyle on the increase of type 1 diabetes in our communities. And we see that in migration studies, if people move from Japan, where there's hardly any diabetes, to Hawaii, where there is more of it, their risk increases if they migrate before their puberty. So yes, there is an environmental factor that we cannot ignore. Another issue is hygiene. You know, we also think that as a pediatrician, we always learn never keep our children cleaner than strictly necessary. And the fact that our immune system gets a little bit more lazy also increases risk. So there are certain environmental factors that affect it, but diet is certainly one of them. Personally, I'm more concerned about things like antibiotics. That's where I think that we could actually mess up the balance that normally keeps our immune system happy, but that needs more studies to be really to really demonstrate. But diet is certainly a factor. Gluten, as we demonstrated last year, can really impact your risk to progress to type 1 diabetes. Even your gluten intake during pregnancy can affect the risk of diabetes in the offspring. So there's a lot that we don't know, but at least we have some good pointers where to focus our future research.
Wow. Wow. This is so interesting. I just have one quick question. When you talk about personalized therapy, you're really talking, are you talking about using the patient's own cells to maybe take them out and turn them into beta cells and put them back in the body? Or is it more just you have to tailor the treatment with the immunotherapy and the enhancing their existing beta cells, you know, just to find the right balance for that person? Or is it actually, you know, using that own body, their own cells, you know, as the therapy?
Yeah, personalized medicine has many meanings. And in my case, it's not exactly the same as what we call precision medicine. So personalized medicine, in the one trial that we're doing with the inverse vaccine, we actually do take the patient's own immune cells and turn them into tolerogenic desensitizing vaccines. But it also has a different level. So for our therapy, we also have to select a subset of patients that has a certain genetic factor, but that we call DR4. About 70% of the patients have this particular genetic variant, and our therapy is designed to bind to that molecule. So in principle, our therapy in the best case would be effective for 70% of the patients, and we're already preparing a new generation of vaccines for the other 30% that usually have DR3. So there is also, in terms of selecting the patients, there is a kind of a precision, a personalization component in there. But in the end of the day, since the disease will also differ between individuals, you need to personalize it. And that's more the precision medicine that we talk about. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of beta cell therapy, in the sense that we make new beta cells out of the patient, the most exciting one, I would think, is what we call induced pluripotent stem cells, where we take any other cell of the body, we first of all turn it into a stem cell, so we de-differentiate it, and then we differentiate it into a beta cell. That one is very personalized because it's your own cell, and the cell that works for you doesn't work for another person who will reject it. That is one that is the highest level of personalization, but that will only work if we manage to re-educate the immune system.
And that would be, I guess that's the process you're working on for this other set of patients, right?
Exactly. So in our WANIC program, we have people working on the beta cell side of the coin, and others like I that work on the immune component, and we have to meet each other somewhere in the middle.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else maybe I should have asked you that I did not ask?
No, I thank you for your interest in our mission. I was impressed by the types of questions that you asked and your sense of the matter. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Well, thanks very much. I appreciate that.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.